You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
Andy Farrell, are you watching?
Sport is so fickle, and you know this more than anyone, Quinny. Like, you know, you're either on top of the world or you're down in the doldrums.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
I signed for them after the Euros. After my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking,
regretting it.
What have I done? Like, I walked into a circus.
It's amazing, isn't it?
We're going to start with the Irish lads because they were somewhat overshadowed. None of our big players got big money transfers, and there's no yellow strap for any of the Irish lads. But there was some movement, interesting movement, to the top of the Championship and the top of League One.
Yeah, and the Jamie McGrath one was interesting because we had a fair idea he was going to leave St Mirren. The deal was running out at the end of the season, so St Mirren wanted to get some money from him, so they got €120,000 from him. And I suppose a lot of Irish fans who have been very impressed with McGrath might have thought he could get a Championship club. Now, it does look like Wigan will be playing in the Championship next season. I don't want to touch wood now. I don't want to put the mockers on them. But they're second in League One at the moment. They have a few games in hand over leaders Rotherham, who obviously have a few Irish players in their squad as well. So all things going according to plan, Jamie McGrath will be playing in the Championship next season. So then the move looks like a much better move than it does right now. But yeah, Wigan are also a team that have been in the Premier League recent enough. We know they had financial troubles. Paul Cook was there when, you know, they got the points deduction and they didn't stay up. They avoided relegation from League One last season, and now they're flying high. And yeah, as I said, it does look good. And you've also got the added factor that there's a couple of Irish players already there in McLean and Will Keane. So I wonder, was James McLean on the phone to Jamie McGrath saying, yeah, come down?
I don't think it's a bad move, really, because no. If you think about it, the next 3-4 months, you hopefully are playing in a team that's playing well, you're dominating games, you're getting possession, you're getting touches, you're getting an opportunity to bed in with the fans, and next season, hopefully, they're in the Championship, and you know, you're a nailed-on starter for a team who hopefully will finish mid-table at worst.
Yeah, and there'll be great buzz about the place if they get back into the Championship, and it's all a bit new again, because now they're thinking we're over the worst of it. You know, the points deduction was the lowest of the low, and now they've regrouped, they've avoided relegation from League One, and they're hoping it's onwards and upwards. And it's a great signing for Wigan, because McGrath has been one of the real many bright sparks in the last, say, 6-7 months under Stephen Kenny, where he just looks something different that we haven't had in the Irish team.
Okay, what about QPR? They're also going quite well in the Championship.
Yeah.
Is this a good place for an Ireland player to be playing week in, week out, if he can get in the team?
Yeah, well, there's already one Irish player in the team, Jimmy Dunn, who's part of the back three, and QPR are fourth in the Championship. Mark Warburton's in charge of them at the moment, and yeah, they're going well. Jeff Hendrick hadn't started a Premier League game for Newcastle all season, played 10 minutes in the league under Eddie Howe, and yeah, he needed to get out of there. He was 30 yesterday, and this was something that, again, he's another player that has looked very impressive in the last few games under Stephen Kenny, when we're thinking, yeah, this is the player that, you know, we want to see. This is the Jeff Hendrick we want to see getting on the ball, making things happen. And then, you know, he comes away from an international window and he's back sitting on the bench at Newcastle, sometimes not even getting on the bench. So he needs to play football. And this is what the January window tends to be about, players getting out of clubs, whether it's loan moves or permanent moves, because you're a professional footballer, the window is short enough for your playing career, and some players are happy to sit on a bench and take the nice wages, but ultimately you want to be playing football and you want to be enjoying your football. So it'd be interesting to see where he fits in, because they do play three at the back. Sometimes they'll always go with a four across. Sometimes they'll go with one behind two strikers, or they'll play one up front and play two behind one striker. So does he have a role in the midfield four as one of the two, or does he play in a more advanced role? I think he can play in either role. And again, he's going into a team that's on a good run at the moment, so that should be a good thing for him.
Again, they don't release the contracts that these players are on, but he is under contract until 2024, which means there's a couple of years left at least on his deal. And Spotrac, again, how reliable or otherwise it is, says he's on 40 grand a week. That's QPR could pay 40 grand a week, so they might be picking up the whole tab.
Yeah, I kind of got the impression that he was on considerably more.
Right.
From Newcastle, but that's just speculation. In terms of what Jeff Hendrick needs, is he needs to get game time. He needs to show that if QPR are part of a run, whether I don't think they're good enough to get into the top two. I look at the business Bournemouth did yesterday. They brought in Nat Phillips. They've brought in Kiefer Moore, Todd Cantwell. They're already full of players that have played in the Premier League as well. And then Blackburn are up there at the moment, which have been quite a story this season. And then Fulham look like they're going to be the ones that win the league. So if QPR are going to go up, it's going to probably be through the playoffs. But if he's part of a playoff winning team, or a team that gets to the playoffs, maybe other clubs see this and they take a punt on him as well. But I said, from an Irish point of view, we need Irish players playing week in, week out. We've obviously got a big year ahead. It's important for Stephen Kenny to build on kind of the end of the last campaign. And yeah, you need players playing.
Could be QPR, West Brom, Burrow, all in playoff spots. Massive Irish interest in every single one of those games.
Yeah.
So that's it. Get on the championship bandwagon once again.
Well, look, I love the championship, and yeah, the playoffs are class as well. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like, there is a few teams that have hit form. Like, one of the, obviously a team that has quite a following in Ireland is Nottingham Forest, and I know they lost at the weekend, but they've kind of stepped up as well under Steve Cooper. So there's still plenty of legs to run in the championship, and there's always one team that kind of makes a late run for it. So hopefully QPR are not one of those teams that kind of falls off in the second half of the season.
Carl Heffernan is on the back of many of the papers today with Stephen Ireland in the photograph. Is Stephen Ireland officially his agent or just a family friend / advisor? Do we get clarification on what role he's had? Certainly in interviews, the Heffernan family have been talking about the importance of Stephen Ireland in the background and helping advise them in recent years. So he's moving from Cork City to AC Milan.
Yeah, that's class, isn't it?
AC Milan, Udinese and Inter.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is, and it's great to see, because for so long players have just been fixated on moving from Ireland to England or maybe Scotland, whereas there is a big bad world out there. Like AC Milan, I mean, even just for Carl Heffernan walking around that club, just to see all the pictures of those famous wins, European Cups, Serie A titles. Look, in fairness, they're back up challenging for league titles again, AC Milan. So how long before he's in there in the training sessions marking Zlatan?
And also at some point Paolo Maldini's going to wander down and go, "Well played, son." You'd be like, don't know, maybe he doesn't know who he is, but like, somebody will tell him this is one of the greatest defenders that has ever played the game. There's a long history of good talented defenders there. It is wild that this has started to happen.
But it makes so much sense
for Ireland.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And I said, for so long players just made the short trip across and they thought, yeah, this is where it's at. But if you think about, we're developing a lot more technical players now than we used to. So you play in those leagues on the continent where you get a bit more time on the ball, but That suits technical players. Also, you go, say you play in the third or fourth tier in English football, how much ball are you going to get at your feet? Sometimes, like, the stakes are high. Ball, look, a lot more teams are playing with the ball on the deck, but you do get games where it's all up in the air, and, you know, young technical players. I'm probably talking more someone like Kevin Zeffie, for example, who was with Shamrock Rovers. He's doing very well over in Inter Milan. But there is players, like, look at what Josh Cullen is doing over in Anderlecht. Surely more Irish players must look now and think, yeah, I want a bit of that. The Dutch leagues, Belgian leagues, go over to Italy, Spain, that kind of thing, where there's a chance out there. And look, it's taken the whole Brexit thing maybe to open the eyes of some of these younger players, but what an experience as well. Different culture.
Oh, totally, yeah. All right, let's move on, because we want to talk about the situation at Everton and the situation at Newcastle and the situation at Arsenal. We've only got about 6 minutes left to do this. So, let's start. If you had to go to war, you're looking for dogs of war. That's what your club's tradition is based on, an unbroken history of being in the top flight. Means so much, like the best days of your entire club's existence in the last two or three decades have been last second winners to keep you up, and you turn around the whole world and you go, Donny van de Beek, you're my man, Dele Alli, come on down, you're my dogs of war. How has Frank Lampard done this? How is he here?
Well, you've got a situation where you've got a manager who has a season and a half of Premier League experience, a season of Championship experience, and he has it all to prove, and he needed players in central midfield. Obviously, Doucouré is out injured again. Tom Davis is injured. So at the moment, he's pretty much got Alan and Andre Gomez, and he needed players in there. I get what you're saying about the dogs of war, but also Everton have aspirations of being something different.
This season.
No, and that's unfortunate. That's the way it's worked out. I've said it before. I think they made such a big mistake by hiring Rafa Benitez. It just put everyone at the club, whether they'd admit it or not, on an absolute downer, that they brought this guy into the club who used to manage Liverpool. So even as good as it could have got under Rafa Benitez, you know, obviously looking at him thinking, I remember you. And again, look, I've said this before, people say it doesn't matter, but for Everton fans, I think it did matter. And I think they're probably feeling a lot better about things now than they were maybe two or three weeks ago, because Benitez is gone and there's some fresh faces in there, and with that it brings hope.
Do you think Dele Alli can have an impact?
Well, he's spoken very well about, you know, his admiration for Frank Lampard when he grew up watching Frank Lampard, and there is similarities in the qualities Dele Alli possesses and displayed when he was at his best, where he could drift into positions and score goals. And you think, I mean, one of his best goals actually came at Goodison Park, where he took a ball on the chest and put it away. That's when Dele Alli was at his best. He's 25. Yeah, he said, it goes back to what I said a few minutes ago about the Irish players. Dele Alli said, I just want to be happy playing football again. And Frank Lampard's hoping that he can be the man to get Dele Alli playing with a smile on his face and scoring goals. Donny van de Beek, he's an unknown quantity in the Premier League. He's only started 4 Premier League games for Manchester United, so we don't know if he can cut it in the Premier League. But as I said, Everton were in a position where they needed central midfielders, and these two players were available, so they've taken a punt on them. And look, we could be talking in 2 months' time saying, it didn't really work out, did it? But only time will tell.
Yeah, except they've got Dele Alli on a 2.5-year contract because they had to do that deal permanently.
Yeah, but in fairness, they won't have to pay all that. Like,
they'll have to pay his wages.
They have to pay his wages, and then the deal is set up that,
which could be $7 million a year.
They could end up paying out big money, but that's only if he delivers. So that wouldn't be a bad thing for Everton.
Yeah, look, in fairness, at that stage, if it's worked, it's worked. And the $40 million to get a player who could score 15 goals a season from midfield or as a forward, okay, whatever. I think that's fine. But it's such a big punt. It's such a big punt for Lampard.
Yeah.
It's another character in the dressing room who has big question marks over him. And you look around that dressing room and you look at the decisions that they've made in the past, and it's like, I don't know. I'm not sure that that's either him or Van de Beek would have been the ones that I would have been going to looking for support as we as it gets to squeaky bum time, because everybody else around there has strengthened as well. Newcastle, Trippier, Wood, Byrne, Bruno Guimaraes and Matt Target on loan. I said earlier, I think this is a good, solid 6.5, 7 out of 10. No crazy swing for the fences with any of those signings, particularly strengthening your defence, your centre midfield. You've got a backup striker, another striker rather. Now, I thought it wasn't a bad transfer window. They didn't get fleeced. There was no ridiculous signings made.
No, I think the standout signing there is Guimaraes from Lyon, Brazilian midfielder, and I think Newcastle fans are going to love him. Now, looking at, you mentioned Everton there, I'm kind of looking at the table. I'm thinking from Southampton down, any one of those could go. The interesting thing about, at the start of the season I went Norwich, Watford, Burnley. Norwich have won back-to-back games, so I'm thinking, gee, maybe Dean Smith could actually turn this around. Burnley obviously got rid of, Chris Wood was sold to Newcastle, I thought that is a big blow. But now they've replaced him with Weghorst, who could actually be a better version of Chris Wood. He's obviously, you know, he's a bit taller, but he's perfect for Sean Dyche.
A full 3 inches.
Yeah. And he's probably more mobile as well. It's one of those that he, you know, he could hit the ground running, and that's exactly what Burnley need. They've a load of games in hand. And Dyche has proven before that he can get them out of trouble. Then I look at Watford and I thought, yeah, they're doomed. But then they've brought in Roy Hodgson, who will probably steady the ship as well. And I think with Newcastle, they only have to finish 17th. I think those signings should be enough to get them out of trouble. So then if you're the likes of Everton, Brentford, Crystal Palace, Southampton, you're looking over your shoulder. Brentford have brought in Christian Eriksen. That could be a masterstroke. So
it's game on. Last one then. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang managed to engineer a transfer to Barcelona. Stunning coup from his perspective. Is it good business for either Arsenal or Barcelona? Arsenal getting credit for taking the wages off the books. It's like, didn't they spend a lot of money to buy him? Wasn't he quite expensive? And now they got nothing for him.
Cut your losses. Yeah. I think there is enough evidence, and there should have been possibly enough evidence before I signed him, that maybe around the dressing room he wasn't the best influence ever. He made up with that with outrageous footballing ability for a couple of seasons, and that was definitely worth it for a period of time, but it's not anymore.
It's a very Arsenal thing to have happened, although at least they're now not playing him and also paying him. Which
They've learned from the Ozil situation where
kind of
he's well in terms of how they've just cut ties a lot quicker.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, he was getting, what, 350 grand? I think the next down is Thomas Partey on 200 grand a week. So straight away, it's...
The ceiling is lowered drastically.
Ceiling is lower. But also, a problem that Arteta has is he's got to clear out players that just are not good for the club. And I'm looking at Granit Xhaka, and look, he'll come back into the team and he'll have games where, oh, yeah, yeah. But then he'll let them down again. He could have 10 decent games and then he'll turn up in a big game and he'll get sent off and we're just left in the same situation. So even look at Arsenal's North London rivals, Tottenham. Conte obviously brought in a couple of players in Bentancur and Kulusevski. Bentancur looks like that could be a really good signing. Kulusevski is somebody he wanted in Inter Milan. But also, it's interesting who he offloaded. He wanted players like Ndombele gone, Lo Celso gone.
Yeah.
Brian Hill is a bit... Well, strange one. He didn't sign him,
and he's only 20. Maybe he goes out on loan and comes back.
Yeah.
Look, we'll come back to Spurs transfer window, because they did do a fair bit of business, and it's going to be much more Antonio Conte squad from this point forward. And I think that's the sign that he's going to stay and see this through now, as opposed to disappearing. The two UA players are his prototype players. There is some breaking GA news in the last 10 minutes or so. In a statement on the Tipperary GA website, Tipperary's three-time All-Ireland winning defender Pádraig Maher has revealed he is retiring because of a neck injury. It's not the end I would have wished for, but the time has come for me to announce my retirement from hurling. Unfortunately, I recently received medical advice regarding a neck injury and I've been advised to step away from contact sport. It's heartbreaking to have to make the decision, but it's the most important one for me and my health moving forward. So it is devastating, I'm sure, that he won't even get to go back and hurl with the club. Representing Tipperary has been my lifelong dream, and I'm truly honoured and privileged to have played for Tip for 13 seasons. I've made some truly great friends and met some great people. I've made memories that will stick with me for the rest of my days. While I wish this could have lasted a bit longer, I'm glad that I can look back and know that I gave everything I had for the blue and gold jersey. And he goes on to thank the GPA, Thurles Sarsfields and I'll never be too far away from the outside field, his school and Turles Óg and the Gardaí. I didn't realise he was a guard as well, and he talks about his parents as well. So obviously heartbroken, Pádraig Maher retiring at 33. It didn't feel like he was done as a hurler at all. It really felt like if Tipperary were going to get back to challenging Limerick, that he was going to be a very important player for them, and like one of the best defenders of his generation. And I think when it comes to talk about the Tipperary greats, as we go on, we're going to realise just how important a player he was. Burst on the scene when they stopped the five in a row. He was part of that under 21, that group of five lads who were under 21s and won the All-Ireland and then won the under 21 All-Ireland in the same week. And, you know, I think delivered on his promise as one of the best defenders of his generation, and just like just a teak tough, like that cliche of being teak tough, it's like picture him in the dictionary beside when you're talking about this. It's like him and, I don't know, Darren Fay, maybe they would be the ones you'd read for.
And he also, the greatest accolade in his career was actually showing up to studio for the morning after the All-Star panel, which is a notoriously tough morning to show up for. He got the call and he answered the call and he showed up after going to the All-Stars the night before. So that's teak tough right there.
Were you hosting that day?
No, I was producing that day. I mean, it's like a huge kind of like shift from Tipperary now. Like Brendan Maher obviously retired as well last year. So it's going to be a year without both of them this year, obviously, and for the foreseeable future. And I guess the other element from this, granted it's a very specific injury that he's had to retire from, is a theme around the age profile of people that are calling it a day in hurling. I guess when you're talking about Pádraig Maher and you think about Brendan Maher and you think about, say, Joe Canning, who retired last year obviously as well, they all came along as young hurlers, and maybe that's just the toll of it over a period of time. But in your early 30s, it looks like time is up for a lot of these players, and it's a young man's game at this point.
An absolute legend, Pádraig Maher. Really, really sad to hear this, because it did feel like there was going to be a couple of seasons where that new group of players were coming through and maybe Bonner was going to be able to integrate them. But unfortunately, in Pádraig Maher's situation, that is not the case. We wish him the very best on his retirement, and it is a brilliant, brilliant, truly brilliant career that he has put down. So he owes nobody nothing at this stage. Right, that's this week's Deal or No Deal.
I signed for them after the Euros, and after my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking, regretting it, what have I done? Like I walked into a circus. It's amazing, isn't it?
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Land's End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.